Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on current events when we come back. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax. And a fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that government does to produce, to prepare, or to deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Now, does the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that they have to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it? So why is it that government gets paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that you and I buy? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, Tax and Status, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. We've been talking about current events this week, and the last current event that I was or had brought to your attention, or the source of it, is the International Forecaster. And the latest issue just came in, and I thought I'd share with you some of the comments, some of the news events that are going on in the world that you hear nothing about. You hear nothing about it in USA Today or U.S. News and World Report or by Katie or Brian or the major news outlets. And that's because the news that you and I receive is managed news. It's the information that you and I, the masses of people, the useless eaters, are supposed to receive. We receive that through the Lehrer News Hour, or through the CBS Evening News, or Charlie Gibson on ABC, but we don't get the kind of information that you and I need to make intelligent and rational decisions when we go to the polls to vote, or when we make economic decisions concerning our investments, or when we go to buy our everyday fare. So, we start off in mid-March. We reported on what transpired at the Trilateral Commission meetings in Brussels, Belgium, the city where we attended the 1958 World's Fair. Well, many issues were discussed, but the centerpiece was that the U.S. government should impose a $1 per gallon tax on gasoline. Let me repeat that. That's a $1 per gallon tax on gasoline here in the United States. Now, if you think that's preposterous, keep in mind that over in Holland, they pay $6.38 a gallon for gasoline. In Britain, it's around the same price, a little less. I think Holland has the highest price in the world, and Venezuela has the lowest price in the world, 12 cents a gallon. That's right. Gasoline in Venezuela, 12 cents. In Holland, $6.38. Now, what's the difference? Well, the difference is that Venezuela is a producer, and Holland, without a single oil well, to my knowledge, is a net consumer. And in order to pay the balance of payments, in order for the Dutch people to pay for that oil that's imported from Venezuela, they have to produce something in their country and sell it to the Venezuelans or sell it to you and me or somebody else in order to get the money in order to buy that gasoline. Now, we Americans aren't that far behind. What we do in this country, we just issue paper, and we spread that paper around the world in the form of bonds and treasury notes and bills and Federal Reserve notes. Now, our problem is that the people that we're giving these notes to are getting nervous about the value of the dollar, and the value of the dollar is now pushing 80 on the dollar index. And now we're going to have to do something about our balance of payments deficits, which is running, you know, at about $750 billion a year. That is that we're exporting $200 billion a year, and we're importing $800 billion a year. We got a $600 billion a year deficit, and so the proposal is this. What we'll do is we'll tax gasoline, just like the Dutch and the English and the Germans and everybody else that imports all of this energy. And we'll tax it a dollar a gallon. Is that going to lower your standard of living? Well, you bet it will. It'll lower all of our standards of living. But it's not as preposterous as you might think, because a solution to that balance of payments has to be somewhere in the cards. Now, ostensibly, this was to produce carbon monoxide, or reduce, rather, carbon monoxide and other greenhouse gas emissions, and to stop global warming. And we mention this again because there has been a concerted effort recently to give these factors a media hype, which was kicked off at the Academy Awards by Al Gore. Now, we can go back to 1991 and remember that the Trilateral Commission wanted to impose a 10-cent tax per gallon back in 1991. And you can see how their ambitions have grown over the past 15 years. The subject was always discussed at Bilderberger meetings as well. This time at the Trilateral Commission meeting, John Deutsch, former head of the CIA, led the charge. And this is the same Mr. Deutsch that was taking classified information home so that he could share it with his other elitist friends. Now, this was the same computer that he used to surf the net in search of pornography. Needless to say, Janet Reno never brought charges against him. Now, I might make an editorial comment here that when you have an elitist, when you have a high government official who commits crimes, very seldom are those people ever prosecuted. It's just people like you and I that get prosecuted. Now, there was much discussion on putting the finishing touches on the EU by achieving a constitution without allowing the electorate to vote on it. Now, France and the Netherlands had already rejected it. If the people do not want it, the Illuminists just end-run them doing as they please. The Asian Pacific Union is established and expanding. The North American Union, however, is running into extensive stiff opposition. The goal of these world power seekers is three regional entities that can be eventually merged to form a super world government. All right, so in Asia, we have a trading bloc emerging. In Europe, we have a trading bloc emerging. And to counter that, here in the United States, we're going to create a trading bloc of the United States, Mexico, and Canada. And then a little later on, they're planning to expand that to all of South America, which will be the United States sphere of influence. Later, these three trading groups will be merged into this New World Order, or this One World Super Government. Now, this One World Super Government is talked about in the Book of Revelation as being a government that lasts a short time, a super dictatorial, evil, wicked government that lasts for just a short time before the second coming. Now, President was the creator of the Trilateral Commission, David Rockefeller, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Henry Kissinger, Madeleine Albright, F. Gerald Corrigan, the former head of the New York Federal Reserve, and presently with Goldman Sachs, Paul Volcker, a former Fed chairman, Andre Desmaris of Power Corporation of Canada, Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase, Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, she's a senator, Stanley Fisher, the former president of Citigroup and now head of the Bank of Israel, Martin Feldstein, the former Fed governor and now a professor at Harvard, Richard Gephardt, a former Democrat, a representative from Missouri, Don Graham, the CEO of the Washington Post, which didn't report the conference, as they do not report the Bilderberger meetings that they attend, nor any of the major meetings of the Trilateralists or other secret organizations around the world. Richard Haass, the President of the Council on Foreign Relations, that's the CFR, Jim Leach, former congressman from Iowa, Brian Mulroney, the former Prime Minister of Canada, Richard Perle, he's a neocon advisor in the White House, Charles Rangel, Democrat of New York, Charlie Rose of the Charlie Rose Show on PBS, Larry Summers, he was a former Treasury Secretary and President of the Harvard College, Harvard University, Strobe Talbot of the Brookings Institution, George Tenet, the former CIA Director, William Webster, the former CIA Director, Robert McNamara, former President of the World Bank, and a host of others. Now, these are some of the people who want to enslave you under this New World Order, this world government. These are the people who want public hysteria so that they can implement that $1 per gallon additional tax on your gasoline. Now, Peter Sutherland, the TC, Trilateral Commission European Chairman, noted the 50th anniversary of the Treaty of Rome, the precursor of the European Union, and the wonders that had been achieved in transforming Europe in readiness for world government. And he noted that allowing citizens to vote on a European constitution was a terrible mistake, and how it would be done by bureaucrats with no voting. Now, if forced to, Sutherland says, they will go to a new, shorter constitution that will not need any voter approval. When all of this was said and done, the key issue was addressing the non-existent global climate crisis by jacking up taxes, which, of course, liquidate U.S. debt and keep the U.S. from bankruptcy. Now, the good news is the personification of evil, David Rockefeller, is in poor health and may soon leave us. David Rockefeller is in his 80s, approaching 90. All right, now the cabal that presently controls America created war in Iraq and Afghanistan for a number of reasons, which we have enumerated in November of 2000 in the International Forecaster. They were a cover to buy time for a collapsing stock market and economy. They did it to stop Saddam Hussein from selling his oil in Iraq in euros rather than in dollars. They did it to outflank Russia and China geopolitically and to set the stage to invade, occupy both Iran, Afghanistan, and Iran, and to directly control and to take a piece of their oil production as well as the oil production in Iraq. Now they control Iraq's oil and the dollar sales. They are extending their geopolitical presence into Eastern Europe and into North Africa. Now, the stock market and the economy have recovered since 2001, and we have had other developments. The scam, known as the War on Terror, the enrichment of the military-industrial complex, the privatization of virtually everything, including our military, the redistribution of wealth to the wealthy by preferential taxation legislation, and the implementation of the corporatist fascist police state. The war profiteering is the most visible aftermath of this war for profit. Now, you might call this the age of the contractor. If General Smedley, that's General Smedley Butler, or General Dwight Eisenhower, were here today, they would smugly be telling us that we told you so. These two men, Smedley Butler and Dwight Eisenhower, would be surprised, though, at the rising militarization of U.S. foreign policy and the powerful special interests that it has spawned. Hungary's special interests of perpetual war. The Pentagon budget for fiscal 2007 is $460 billion. Now, there will be a proposed increase in 2008 of 10%, which will bring the defense budget to over half a trillion, $506 billion. A supplement appropriation for Iraq and Afghanistan puts the total at $651 billion. And all of these supplemental spending bills are off budget. That is the highest military spending since World War II. Now, 2008 military spending represents 58 cents out of every dollar spent by the United States government on discretionary programs. This cost crowds out domestic needs just as raising money for government debt crowds out business borrowing, making such borrowing more expensive. And that can only be offset by monetary credit creation, which results in inflation. Worse yet, that military spending is really about double, $651 billion, because you have to add in such items as the Veterans Administration budget, nuclear weapons research and testing, the Department of Homeland Security, the Coast Guard, retiree benefits, foreign military aid, and then other hidden expenses such as tax-free food and housing and combat and TDY pay. The big beneficiaries of all of this military spending are elitist multinational corporations such as Lockheed Martin or the Boeing Corporation and Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics. And we shouldn't forget Halliburton, Kellogg Brown and Root, Fluor, Bechtel, and Blackwater. And if that's not enough, there are hundreds of smaller contractors that are all eating at the government's defense trough. Now, at the same time as these outflows grow, there are giant tax cuts for the wealthy. Giant tax cuts that our president wants to make permanent. Now, that means that the top 1%, whose incomes are over $400,000 a year, will get tax cuts averaging $67,000 a year by 2012. Those that are making over $1 million a year would get $162,000 a year more by 2012. And while our president is rewarding his wealthy friends, he wants to increase military spending by $50 billion. And then he wants to cut taxes $1.6 trillion over 10 years, or an annual deduction of about $160 billion a year for the wealthiest in our midst. As a result, funding for domestic programs would have to be cut by $114 billion in order to pay for these handouts to the rich, and the major cuts would come from 140 programs that provide for the poor and middle-income families. Now, during George Bush's reign, households received tax cuts of $20 or 0.03% in the lower one-fifth tax bracket. In the middle fifth, they got a $740 tax cut, or 2.5%. In the top 1%, they got $44,200, or 5.4%. And those with incomes of over $1 million received $118,000, or 6%. Now, wars, not only for the reasons listed above in 2000, but as a cover, wars are used for redistribution of income. Now, these are wars of choice, or wars for profit and social planning. Losing the income is bad enough, but gaining a police state in the process and losing our freedoms is even worse. And that all has happened to Americans over the past 6 years. Now, these are elitist objectives, and these are objectives that can be driven by either Republicans or Democrats, and have been over the last 25 years. In addition, we now have a Praetorian Guard of 100,000 mercenaries. That's right, 100,000 contractors, contract soldiers, who will eventually be used internally within our country to keep peace, keep law and order. So whether you like it or not, we have imperial government and our very own Caligula. This military imperialism has become a parasitic host and is sucking the life out of our democracy. War profiteering is bringing additional riches to the elitists, who will use those riches to control all of us. Having commented on greenhouse gases and the plot by the elitists to implement a $1 per gallon tax on gasoline, we hear from Democratic presidential candidate who has or was anointed as such by the Bilderberger Group. His name is John Edwards, and he says that America should charge industry for creating these greenhouse gases to generate money for investing in clean technology. And he says that charging polluters could generate up to $40 billion. Now, what Edwards doesn't say, of course, is that those costs would be passed on to consumers, and that would be inflationary, and, in addition, it won't work. This is the new mantra, and what the Illuminists are shaping for your future, as depression looms over the horizon. I might point out here as an editorial comment, the concept in most people's minds is that let's tax the rich. This concept was first brought to the fore in politics in the early 1930s by Franklin D. Roosevelt when he made the observation and the comparison that Henry Ford in 1930 made $30 million. And he did that for the express purpose of arousing jealousy in the minds of Americans who were unemployed. He said, look at Henry Ford, made $30 million bucks in 1930, and how much did you make? And he said, what we need to do is to tax the rich. So Americans bought into that program, and they elected Franklin D., and so the Democrats began to incrementally, over time, increase the income tax to 91%. This was done so that the rich would get taxed, people like Henry Ford. Now, the truth of the matter is that the tax system is set up in such a way that it gives tax deductions. Let me tell you a little story. Back in the 1960s, I used to run a contracting company in California. And I had an accountant, his name was Don Bell. Well, Don now would have me bring in all of my tax records, all of my business records, as soon as October the 1st occurred, in the first 9 months of the year. Then he would work on them through the month of October, and he'd come to me at the end of October, and he'd say, okay, here's where you are in the first 9 months. You have all of this surplus income, therefore we need to dispose of that income in a more constructive manner to minimize your taxes. So we would take that excess income, the profits, and we would invest that into apartment houses or some other investments, of which there are literally hundreds of these tax-deferred or tax-avoidance-types programs. The kind of program that isn't available to you, the wage earner, the truck driver, the carpenter, and the plumber, but what is available to the businessman. So we would take that money and go out and buy an apartment house. Then, at the end of the year, when we filed our taxes, we wouldn't owe any tax. we had things like depreciation allowance and so on. All right. Now, over a period of 5 years, I didn't pay any taxes. Virtually zero. One day, I come into Don's office. This is about 1972 or 3. And he said, well, we have to pay some tax this year, George. And I said, well, why do we have to pay tax this year, Don? After all, we haven't paid any tax over the last 4 years. And he said, well, because it's part of the rules. Part of the rules. You have to have a profit-oriented business in order to take advantage of these tax deductions, these tax investment schemes, and so on. He didn't use the word scheme. You know, these are opportunities. Opportunities for business. And so I said, well, how does that work? And he said, well, you know, if you don't have at least 1 year out of five where you have a profitable year and in which you can pay some tax, the IRS then declares your entire operation to be an enterprise that is non-taxable. Therefore, we have to tax it all, and you can't have these deductions. So I said, well, what do we do? He says, well, we just don't take your deductions that you would normally be entitled to. You know, like your depreciation allowance on the Raymond apartments or on Dutton properties or something like that. And I said, oh, I see how that works. Okay. So he prepared our tax returns for 1972 or 3, one of those years. And so we paid about $6,000 a year in tax. And it reminded me of Ronald Reagan, who was an actor. Remember old Ronald Reagan? He was a pretty wealthy guy. He'd been making movies for many years. And he was running for president about 1976. Remember when he was trying to get the Republican nomination from Gerald Ford? Well, it came out that Ronald Reagan, in 1975, had only paid $1,700 in income tax. And at the time, it was touted that Ronald Reagan paid less tax than the average plumber. That's right. A man that makes millions of dollars a year paid less tax than the average plumber. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything illegal. But because of his position of wealth, like Henry Ford in 1930, he could take advantage of all of the myriad laws that Congress enacts for the rich. Because it's the people who are rich, like Henry Ford and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. And then it isn't just the super wealthy, it's also just the wealthy, the people that are making $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 a year. You know, the plumbers, excuse me, not the plumbers, but the real estate brokers and the lawyers and the doctors. And then there are the businessmen that are making $1 million, $2 million, $5 million a year, you know, not super wealthy, not super rich, not the guys that are making $100-200 million a year running the multinational corporations, but just, you know, normal wealth. These people pay little or no tax. And of course, these are the people that give the campaign contributions to the senators and representatives. Campaign contributions are described in the Bible as being bribes. They're called gifts. And these gifts pervert the eyes of the wise. Now, that's the system of government that you have. Now, your Creator told you not to do that. And we Americans said, oh, no. Now, we got a better handle on government. We want a king like all the nations around us. That's what we told our Creator back in 1 Samuel chapter 8. He said, we want a king like all the nations around us. And about verse 19, he said, now, you'll cry out to me in that day because of this king that you have set over you, and I will not hear you. So I always tell my students, you know, you don't need to pray to Jesus because he's not going to listen to you. He already told you he's had it with you over that issue. Now, there are some things that you and I can do. We are getting screwed, blued, and tattooed. We are being raped, robbed, and pillaged by what's described here in the international forecaster. Bob Chapman calls it the Bush crime family. Before that, we had the Clinton crime family. I always ask my students, would you do business with the mafia? And they look at me, you know, with feigned horror. Well, of course we wouldn't do business with organized crime. So I always ask them, well, why do you do business with government or multinational corporations? Now, I've got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed or necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the International Forecaster. It's a paper put out by Bob Chapman. The International Forecaster has a webpage at www.theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word. That's www.theinternationalforecaster.com. The email address is internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. Now, again, that's International Forecaster, two words, at yahoo.com. I recommend the International Forecaster. It's $130 a year. It's one of many that we subscribe to here on the Law Hour. It's a part and parcel of the information that comes across my desk every day. I don't report on everything that comes through. But from time to time, when something newsworthy comes up that we don't hear about, I like to report on it. Now, beneath the surface in America, discontent and violence is simmering, and one of the most volatile issues is illegal immigration. Now, take New Bedford, Massachusetts, where 361 illegal aliens were removed from a leather goods plant. Nobody showed up for a week after the raid. And the comment is ICE, that's ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, needs to go to New Bedford to set up shop. These illegals are using the hospitals as a doctor's office. They are putting great strain on the city. If ICE wants to find out where the illegals are working, all they have to do is look for the bicycles, and they're lined up outside the fish houses, and they've taken our jobs, another resident said. And there are plenty of empty mills in New Bedford that we can make into deportation centers very quickly. Now, there's a business to get into. The raid pinpointed resentments that were brought into the open that had been long simmering in the struggling city. It forced residents to look at the issue of illegal immigration for what it is, the jobs taken. The services being utilized, the schools and the local services. This raid on the Michael Bianco plant was pinpointed exactly, or has rather pinpointed exactly, what the problems are and what needs to be done. Enforcement is the answer, and what the raid did was bring the city's mostly underground illegal alien population into sharp relief, making them feeling vulnerable and unwelcome. It has hardened attitudes against illegals, as these illegals demand rights. When lawbreakers have no rights, another resident said, I'm pro-American, and Americans deserve to work in a location or a locale that they're familiar with. And here we have job training going to illegal aliens. It is devastating to our economy, period. Well, now, talking about illegal immigration here in the United States, it's a part and parcel of a plan to destroy the economy of the United States. The outsourcing of employment from America is a part and parcel of that plan to destroy the economy and to reduce the United States of America to a dependent third world type nation and to meld it into this new world order. If you want to know where the real cause of this problem originates, it's with you and it's with me. And it has to do with our Creator. And it has to do with our violation of basic principle laws called the Ten Commandments. And you can read about this penalty clause in Leviticus chapter 26. Now, if you didn't know where that is located or don't know, it's in the Scripture. It's in the Bible. And Leviticus is the third book. And that third book has a chapter. It's chapter 26. In the first 13 or 14 verses, it describes, here's what I'm going to give you if you'll practice the Ten Commandments, and here's what I'm going to do to you if you don't. Now, he repeated that in greater detail in the second chapter in Deuteronomy chapter 28. And then again, in about the first 13 or 14 or 15 verses, he says, now here's what I'm going to give you. Here's the benefits for practicing the Ten Commandments, and here's what I'm going to do to you if you don't. What we are witnessing now in the United States, and have been since about 1950, is the consistent and continual degeneration of America's military, economic, and political power worldwide through our elected and political institutions. Now, our God has warned us and told us, and I think that we'd get more mileage out of going back to the Ten Commandments, but I'm not here as a philosopher or as a preacher. I'm here as a reporter. I think you'd do better practicing the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread than voting in the upcoming election. Now, Americans have it in their minds that what we need to do is vote for Obama or Hillary or John Edwards or anybody but a Republican. But I want to point out to you that the Republicans and Democrats, since the end of World War II, have been working in unison for this ultimate outcome called the New World Order. And it's being financed by the super rich people like David Rockefeller, the Warren Buffetts, and the Bill Gates. Now, it is true that Gates is new money, but the super wealthy can't function in the international business world without joining up with the elitists. This committee of 300 is described by a guy named Chapman, and he wrote a book called The Committee of 300. Not a relative here, by the way, I don't believe, of Bob Chapman, who puts out the International Forecaster, but rather John Chapman, who's an English MI6 spook who now lives in Carson City, Nevada. Came over here from England. I listened to him one day. He was at a conference out in Denver, Colorado, and he had a workshop here at this conference, and I went in and listened to him, and when he got through, I said, "Now, aren't you concerned that the information that you're disseminating here in the books and pamphlets that you're writing are going to get you in trouble here with the powers that be because you are disseminating these secrets, government secrets?" And he said to me and everybody that was in the room, he said, "I'm not revealing to you any secrets. Everything that I have revealed to you is public information. Public information. These are not secrets. Even though they're not widely disseminated in the press, these are already published." He said, "I know a lot of secrets. And I can't tell you what I know, because I am a security agent. Once you join MI6 or the CIA, you're in for life. Once you become a member of the CIA, they will determine what you can publish and what you can say in public and what you can disseminate." And he said, "I'm not giving you anything here that hasn't already been approved and has already been published." I told my wife, I said, "My God, if only 10% of what this guy says is true, we are doomed." That's what we get from Magombo. He says, "Now we're freaking doomed because of the policies that are being followed here in the United States." But it's not just the United States. You Canadians are being led down the primrose path also, along with the Australians and the New Zealanders. So let me tell you a little piece of the riddle, or a little part of the story. Back in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, we have on the one hand God telling you, "Now listen, you know, children, if you'll pay attention to me and do that which is right, do that which is good, I'm going to give you some great benefits." And we Americans, our forefathers, when they came over here from England and Ireland and Scotland and so on, they were pretty religious people. Those were people called Puritans. Remember that? And they did their best to obey God and keep His commandments. They were pretty righteous people. They didn't practice all of the laws of God, but they practiced a whole lot more of the law than we practice today. And as a result of that, our God, our Creator, actually benefited us, gave us these bennies, as we call them in business, and gave us rain in due season, and gave us political superiority over other nations in the world. Economic benefits. We became rich and powerful. And like so many spoiled kids, you know, when you get rich and powerful, pretty soon you get to be hedonistic. And so we have degenerated into sodomy in this country. And we practice sodomy in this country openly and notoriously. And we've declared that it is a civil right. And that's just one of our criminal activities. It isn't the only one. We practice adultery and free sex and all kinds of chicanery. We have an open system of bribery that goes on in our political sphere. We don't call them bribes. We call them campaign contributions. But, you know, when the Boeing Company gives $1 million to somebody in Washington or in your state legislature, they expect a vote commensurate with the campaign contributions that they're making. And Hillary Clinton the other day had $10 million left over from her last election campaign, remember, running for the Senate? She had $10 million left over so she can run for president. That kind of money comes from campaign contributions from people like Boeing Aircraft and Lockheed Martin and Bechtel and Halliburton. And those millions of dollars that go into these campaigns buy our votes. That's the objective. And these criminal activities that we're involved in, that's you and me and everybody else down here on Main Street, that is electing and participating in these programs, these policies, these politics, makes us accessories after the fact It makes us just as guilty as the people who are given the bribes. And that's just not, that's just the tip of the iceberg. It's not necessarily an indictment of the entire panoply of criminal behavior going on here in the United States. But it, you know, it'll give you a little thumbnail sketch of it. Now, people like Bob Chapman come along, and they're politically oriented people. They want you to vote for this guy or vote that guy out. They see a political solution to the problem. Kind of reminds me of Alex Jones. Comes on the air and he says, let me report all of these bad problems to you. And those are bad problems. Like the trade tower, the war on terror, and the attack on the Pentagon, and so on. And I don't deny that. And that's important information. But the solution isn't in politics. If the solution was political, we would have solved that problem years ago. The political system is broke, just like the economic system is broke. And it's going to take something more than voting for this or that guy. You see, our Congress isn't spending us into insolvency accidentally. They're doing it on purpose. It isn't George and the neocons that are spending us into oblivion. It's Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats who were doing it with the Clinton administration before George Bush came along. We've had inflation and deficit spending. And we have had policies since the 1930s, the adoption of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in place of the 10 Commandments, which began with Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1933. It isn't something that's new, that came along with Bill Clinton or George Bush. It's been going on. It's endemic. It's been going on, you know, all of my life and a little bit more than that. We need a solution. There's no doubt about it. And the solution is that the nation needs to turn around. Religious people call it evangelism, you know, or repentance or something like that, which nearly everybody, you know, that still has a brain on their head, you know, rejects as being diatribe and nonsense. The religious people don't have the answers. Hell, if they had the answers, we wouldn't have the problems we've got today. The politicians don't have the answers. If they had the answers, we wouldn't be in the dilemma that we're in today. Now, it's more fundamental than that. The whole nation is sick. We're bribing our politicians. And then we're practicing sodomy and every perversion that we can get our hands on. We're burning the candle at both ends and then wonder why it is we got bad results. Now, there is an inevitable end to all of this. And the inevitable end is national captivity. And you can read about that in Leviticus 26, verse 34. And it stems from Sabbath breaking. Now, I mentioned this before. I'm going to mention it again. In this country, we used to practice the Sabbath. We used to have blue laws in this country. And everybody practiced the Sabbath, albeit maybe on the wrong day of the week. But everybody shut their business down on Sunday. Now, since World War II, we have become enlightened. And we've said, well, this Sabbath thing is religious nonsense, and we're not going to do that. Well, okay. You made your choice. Now, Sabbath breaking is one of those Ten Commandments. It happens to be the fourth. And the penalty for Sabbath breaking, children, is national captivity. And it's coming upon us. And I just wanted to point it out so you'd be prepared for it. And when it happens, then you'll know why. You ought to have somebody tell you, okay, there's a cause and effect relationship here. If you want to have clean government, you have to have clean people. The people who are your leaders in government have to be honest and moral people. I don't know of very many honest or moral people in our government. And I don't think that dishonest and immoral electors out here on Main Street are very likely to elect honest, moral representatives and senators to the Congress. It reminds me of Bill Clinton when he was being impeached over that Monica Lewinsky thing, you know, among other things, his sexual indiscretions. There was a poll taken, and 72 or 3% of the people said what Bill Clinton does in the Oval Office on his own time is his own business. So the immorality demonstrated by former President Bill Clinton was underwritten by nearly three-quarters of the American people. Well, boys and girls, when three-quarters of the American people are that morally bankrupt, they're not very likely to be electing moral representatives and senators. And so, as the old saying goes, you get the kind of government that you deserve. Now, this Michael Bianco company, like millions of American businesses and corporations, were turning away legal job applicants in favor of illegal aliens because they wanted submissive slave labor. Over 50% of the workers were illegal aliens. You got a problem here, boys and girls, with illegal aliens, but they're not going to be solved by immoral people who are running our businesses, running our government, running our colleges and institutions. Your problem is that the people that you have at the helm of the ship of state are corrupt, immoral, wicked, evil leaders who have been placed in office by morally bankrupt, wicked, evil, corrupt electors down here on Main Street. If we want to make changes, we have to make changes here at the local level. That's you and me. And that's why I suggest we go back to the Ten Commandments and that we abandon the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, the second plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for a heavy progressive income tax. Well, okay, children, we now have a heavy progressive income tax. We practice the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. And we got a result that came from it. Income tax didn't come from God, and it didn't come from the Bible, and it didn't come from the Ten Commandments. We got tithing as an economic system for operating our government from our God. We got the Communist Manifesto from Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1933. I would suggest that we reevaluate this income tax. Now, the tenth plank of the Communist Manifesto calls for free education for all children in public schools. Boys and girls, our God instructed us to instruct our children at home and to teach our children to this law, the Ten Commandments. In our public schools, they teach separation of church and state. We didn't get separation of church and state from our Constitution or from our founding fathers. It didn't come from the Constitutional Convention, and it didn't come from our Bill of Rights. It has come from the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, I'm not here to tell you what it is that you need or have to do, but I'm here to tell you that what you've been doing in the past hasn't worked, and it's not very likely to work any better in the future than it has in the past. Now, the dollar broke 82.41 and then broke 82 this past week. Do you know that? You know, the dollar has been under attack now for about 10 or 15 years. It's under attack because the dollar is a fiat currency. In our scriptures, our Bible, in our Anglo-Saxon administration, just weights and balances have always been the history of Israel going back to Mount Sinai. Our instructions were, thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. It was your bankers, it was your J.P. Morgans, it was your Harrimans and Rothschilds, it was your politicians like Roosevelt and Truman that came along and said, oh no, God's all wrong. Why, we need to have paper money and stocks and bonds. Well, okay, now you've got paper money and stocks and bonds. And now you've got inflation, and the value of your dollar is now 2 cents compared to what it was in 1930, and it's degenerating, and now the dollar is under attack. We're not talking about saving the dollar. We're talking about saving the last 2 cents of the dollar. The other 98 cents is already gone. It's already squandered, like the prodigal son. That's history. Dead letter issue. So Bob Chapman comes along and says, now the dollar broke 82.41 and then broke 82 this past week. 80 to 80.60 is the next stop. If 80 is broken at 78.33, then 78.19, and if that's broken, look out below. The dollar is finally reflecting all of America's problems. America is a nation in decline because our Illuminist elites want us to be financially and economically humbled, so we will be forced to accept world government. I don't deny that. I'm going to pause right there, put my arrow in the margin. But I'd like to recommend that you go back and take a look now at Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. It may be true that these elites over here are leading the charge, but you can rest assured that your God is standing right behind them and directing the operation. The destruction of the United States of America, Canada, Australia, and Western Europe is being orchestrated by our Creator. The use of Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and David Rockefeller are incidental to the cause and effect relationship that's actually coming down upon us. Now, we made some bad choices back in 1914 concerning the Federal Reserve. We've made some bad choices concerning the men that we have elected to lead us. We've made some bad choices, but that doesn't mean we can't correct the choices. But I don't think voting for Hillary is going to correct that bad choice. He concludes this section. He says, as the dollar goes, so goes the U.S. economy. And whether they want to believe it or not, the world economy. The dollar index at 80 has been tested five times since 1978, and this time it'll break 80 decisively. And that'll send gold and silver into orbit, and with them the shares as well. If gold wasn't being manipulated, it would already be $2,200 an ounce or more. It's shortly going to be every country for itself and every man for himself. If the Illuminists think for one moment that foreign central banks will try to rescue the dollar, they're mistaken. Every country will be in deep trouble. And wait until citizens in country after country find out that their gold has been all sold off. There should be many hanged. Well, that may be the case, but it's locking the door after the horse has been stolen. Now, it'll be every man for himself, all right. I agree with that. And you better be thinking about, well, what are you going to do when the dollar breaks 80 and gold goes to $2,200? It's just a matter of time, children. A matter of time. If I was a prophet, I'd tell you when, and I'd be rich in the process. Now, I got to remind you here that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Air time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.